to another special episode of the D-Fly and Dixie podcast, featuring Inside Lacrosse, Big Ten Network, ESPN analyst, and my good friend, Mark Dixon. I am your host, Dan Flynn. Before we start, I want to thank all of you for your continued support of this podcast and all of our pods here at Inside Lacrosse. Follow us on Twitter at Dixon Lacrosse and at D underscore Fly, at D underscore FLY, or you can email me at dflynn@insidelacrosse.com. And if you like what you hear, please hit that subscribe button, leave a rating on iTunes, and by all means, tell a friend and share it. After the outstanding feedback Dix and I received following our special podcast with Jerry Smith, talking about the closing of PJ's Pub and what that place meant to lacrosse fans, and also the greater Johns Hopkins community, we decided we needed to deliver a special off-season podcast once a month for you guys. Today we'll play part two of our conversation with legendary lacrosse coach Dick Adell. We had the fortune of going out to Dick's house a week ago and recording a great session with him that we were able to break into two parts. And we hope you enjoyed part one last week. And if you haven't checked that out, you may or may not want to go back and listen to that first. A few words on Coach Adell. He won 282 games as a college coach at the University of Baltimore, Army West Point, and the University of Maryland before his career was cut short while still in his prime in 2001. He's in the U.S. Lacrosse and IMLCA Coaches Hall of Fames. And this past weekend, Big Man was inducted into the Athletic Hall of Fame at Army West Point. So congrats on another honor, Coach. So we pick up the conversation. He's moved on from West Point to the University of Maryland. And Dixie, let's get it.
So at the University of Maryland now, this is where you, at least from where I'm standing, you became the big man, or get the nickname big man. was that at Maryland in College Park, or was that previous to your
Army.
I remember you're an ogre.
I followed Krzyzewski's instructions. I was the ogre. Mm-hmm. I didn't smile until I got into the kitchen at my house, after practice. I don't know. My kids would call me, but now I'm more like media man, and I said, when we hired Ralph, I said, I leave as Ralph.
Ralph Regan. That's not
true.
Fridge.
When I get there, Ralph's the offensive line coach and a good friend. But when he comes back, I'm leaving. And, as Laura said, he stayed at that dinner table a lot longer than I did, Ralph was truly a big man.
So why the change, and did you like the change from being the ogre at Army that was the hard guy, according, following Mike Krzyzewski's advice, to becoming really, truly a beloved big man at College Park?
I don't I don't care what you just call. Don't call me a loser, and don't say something in a derogatory way. I think guys love, nicknamers. We had, I know people will say you're a hard ass, when you talk, we had a lot of fun.
Sure.
They tease me, and I tease them, we could laugh at each other, and we could laugh at ourselves. In fact, I don't know what I would have done if I couldn't laugh.
Sure.
A bunch of fun-loving guys. Sometimes a little bit too much fun-loving, but that's what we were there for, I guess, to straighten that out.
Sure. You went to national championship games in 1995, 1997, and 1998. And I saw a quote recently, or a passage from an article, when John Tillman made his first national championship appearance with Maryland in 2011, the writer interviewed you and said, what advice are you going to give Coach Tillman about the championship game? And you said, listen, I can talk to him about how to win on Saturday, but I got diddly squat to say about how to win on Monday.
I said that to, I did it with Mark up in Delaware.
Okay.
And Mark asked me the same thing. I said, got the smile and said, we were too good on Monday. We were world beaters on Saturday.
As a coach at Army and then a coach at Maryland, you've had a front row seat to two of the, what I think are the greatest rivalries in the sport in college lacrosse. How are they similar and how are they different?
Let me say this. I think rivalries are pretty awesome. You know, you got to go back a little bit with those 14 or 15 or 16-year-olds, Calvert Hall Loyal, you know, and you're leaving one out that will never exist again because University of Baltimore dropped their athletic program. But I don't think I've ever been around a more intense rivalry in my life than BU Loyola soccer.
Interesting, yeah.
Because the kids live together. You know, the majority of them commuted from Howlintown. They were together all. And each year, we played three times. We played in the regular season game. We played in the Mason-Dixon playoffs. And then we played in the NCAA playoffs. And you had Army, Navy, you know. And then, you know, Maryland, how does hell? We'll play on Route 1. We don't give a damn.
Yeah.
Get it on, man.
Right.
Let's get it on. You know, I tease our guys. You know that. I know I'm famous for that. You know, beat them now because you're going to be working for them next year.
So I'm glad you said that because I say that on broadcasts, interviews. I've had the privilege of covering at least 10 Maryland Hopkins games. And I say that, and my Maryland friends are like, stop saying that. Big Ben would never say that. But you said that. Two famous quotes from you. One, beat them now because you work for them one day. And the second one is, in my dying breath, I'm going to shove my fist down that tuba for the Hopkins band.
I didn't know he was writing an article. What do you think when you hear that? I'd like to shove my fist down.
They're great quotes. They're great quotes.
And then I read it. Hey, we're at Homewood. It's near the end, so it's got to be 9-2001. TV game. End of the first half. Close game. We take a timeout. 25 seconds. Set something up. And go back to run it. They don't do what we told them to do. And we're going right past us into the middle there, into the. And I'm standing there waiting. You know, it might have been Maddie or Andrew Whipple. You know, or grab him. You know what? And just as they almost get to me. A guy with a field mic, you know, sticks it there. Look at that scoreboard. What do you think? You know, in fact, I'm going to tell you, it's Keith.
Keith Mills. Yeah, sure.
And I said, I think I'm going to puke. You know, I said, Mark, I think I'm going to puke. So I come home, and Chrissy, as a message on the phone, called me. Well, yeah. You realize what you just said, and said you were talking to Keith. You called him Mark. You know, I'm in damn shock. on the sideline.
Yeah,
we were into that.
Coach, one of at least in my memory, the greatest years of the rivalry recently was the 1995 team. Hopkins had one of their best teams in a long time. And they win in Byrd Stadium. I remember that game in the regular season. I think Terry Reardon scored the game-winning goal.
Mm-hmm.
And then you meet again in Byrd in the NCAA semifinals.
Yeah.
And
let me take you back.
Yeah.
Regular season game. Tie game. Our ball. Timeout. And we're going to the away from. We're going into the horseshoe, away from the locker room. And we set what we think is going to be a game-winning play. It's Greg Nealon, who's one of my captains. Comes away, kid. He starts it too soon, and we turn it over. And our defender is going too long. The keeper throws it to Picola, one of those guys, and they score with like 5 seconds to go to beat us. At the very least, It should be overtime. Mm-hmm. At the best, we should win it. So we're going into that semifinal. There are a couple of stories I've got to tell you about.
Okay.
As the lowest rated team, you get the last pick of practice. Mm-hmm. Practice is like 8 o'clock in the morning. And the banquet's like at 6 o'clock in the morning. You know, what in the hell are we going to do with these guys all day? You know, and soft knows I'm the cheapest man on the face of the earth. You know, so I don't want to spend a whole lot of money. We end up, we're going to go to the Washington Zoo.
Great zoo.
Well, first we have a little semi-mutiny. You know, I've got to get my captain's involved. We're all going. You know, like it or not, we're all going.
Mm-hmm.
And I sent it with Dave because I got to do a press conference with the two captains. And let them yell at Dave when they're nervous. We end up, Greg and, I mean, maybe Greg and Danny. We end up getting out there 2 hours later. And as we're coming in, we can hear, you know, will the young man with the Marilyn LaCrosse shirt on stop banging on the snake cage? You know? So we round these guys up. They don't want to leave.
And it was Scott Maher with the Maryland shirt banging on.
Now picture this. There's an inner story to this. They're a better team than we are. And you hit Dan, you were right on it. They were the best team in lacrosse at you. Tony should have won the national championship. Tony should have stayed at Hoppin as long as he wanted to stay at Hoppin. You know, a little fat kid from Philadelphia messed it up for him. but picture this. My assistant coach is playing, coaching one of the biggest games of his life. His brother, if he loses, is playing the last game of his life.
Yeah, yeah.
And I always said to Scott, you know, man, Scotty's like a son to me. Mm-hmm. You know, I love you, but I respected the hell out of you. That you could coach like hell to beat him.
Sure.
You know, when knowing what it would mean to David. And we like to, hey, 16-8, you know, with 2 minutes to go, I'm still looking. Is it possible for them to score? That's Brian.
Well,
Pecola,
it's
Reardon.
Pecola, Maher. Reardon, Pete Jacobs, David Maher, Brian Kuzma on defense. I mean, it was.
I'll share this one. One of my great, most disappointing things in my coaching career, that I had a great backup goaltender named Craig Lafferty.
Yeah.
Delaney High School.
Sure. One of his best friends and teammates from Delaney, Chris Steer, was on the Johns Hopkins team.
Absolutely. And Chris Steer's father, Buzzy, grew up in Dundalk. I knew his father.
Okay.
A coach that had his wits about him would have pulled off Brian Dougherty for a well-deserved ovation, and more importantly to me, get this kid on the field. I've every time I see him, I blew it. And you know, I'm telling the truth.
Yeah, yeah. A couple things there. One, with Dave Slavkovsky, a lot of people don't remember that Dave is a Blue Jay, is a Johns Hopkins Blue Jay. Played for Bob Scott, but coached at Maryland for such a long time, you forget about that. Second thing is, that was my first year out of school, and that was my first gig with ESPN. I was working that year with Leif Elsmo on a show called STX Lacrosse Weekly, and my job for championship weekend was to be a runner, meaning I would go around the stands and pull people out to be interviewed by our sideline reporter. Christy Lee was her name. So I remember I was able to get guys like Tom Marichek, Scott Bacigalupo. Monday during your championship game, I'm walking around the stadium and I run into Ted Koppel. He's a Syracuse grad.
Nightline.
Ted Koppel, Syracuse graduate. At first he said no, but then he said, who's it for? I said, for ESPN. He goes, well, they're part of the ABC family, and he was ABC Nightline.
Yeah.
So I got Ted Koppel. And to this day, I still regret not getting a picture. But, you know, it's not professional to get people that you ask for interviews to get for pictures. But I should have gotten a picture with Ted Koppel.
Chrissy Lee interviewed me once, like at halftime. Or, you know, are you in? try and get somebody. And I can remember, I said, we don't give a damn who gets the goal as long as we score. And she lost her blood drain out of her face. You
know? Well, I remember running around the stadium. That was the first semifinal game that
yes, sir.
Was you guys and was Maryland Hopkins. And the second semifinal was Virginia-Syracuse. And I remember looking up at the scoreboard every now and then because I couldn't watch the game because I was running around looking for people to grab for Christy so she could interview them. And I remember it being Maryland's up by four. Okay, the Hopkins is going to – Maryland's now up by six. Maryland's – it's just like to your point, you're looking up with 2 minutes left thinking that something bad's going to – I'm thinking – because a lot of my friends were on that Johns Hopkins team, and I'm thinking, okay, and then the clock hits zero, and I'm like, there's no way. Well, how did they lose? But to your point, you know, just an amazing game and one of the biggest wins in Maryland history for sure. Absolutely.
It might be the only time, Mark, that the – MVP of the tournament was on the losing team.
Right, Brian Daugherty.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Did that win, so you kind of flipped the tables on Hopkins. 87, you guys were undefeated. The Blue Jays beat you in the playoffs, in the semifinals. You flipped the script on them in 95. In any way, did that mitigate the 87 loss?
No, because then I thought they flipped the thing on us. I thought the best team of 5, 6, 7, and 8 mm-hmm. was 6.
96, at Hopkins in the quarters.
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
100 degrees.
Mm-hmm.
You remember the score at halftime?
I don't.
Johns Hopkins 7, Maryland nothing.
That was right. That's right. Okay.
7 nothing. I didn't want to go back. Soft, you go back down. And we score like 4 goals, 7-4, 7-5, and then they pulled it back.
Sure.
And picture in the papers, Petro hugging Tony at the end of the year.
Yeah. I remember that, the 96. Yeah, the 96 game. Yeah. Then you end your coaching career with a loss in the quarterfinals to Towson.
Tony,
of all. What do you remember from that game with it? And you didn't know at the time it was going to be your last game.
Absolutely. Did not. That's not true. I knew it was going to be my last game.
Okay.
I didn't think I was going to lose that game.
Gotcha. Sure.
I figured my last game was going to be
in the championship weekend,
I like Tony. Tony was one of the fun guys in the profession.
Yeah.
You know, I like competing against him. You know, I liked him as a person. As fate would have it, we had some pretty meaningful. an Army once. It snowed like a little bit, and we postponed the game with him. And the game could have been played. He's never let me forget that. You know, we played.
And was Coach Seaman at Penn at the time?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so there's been some back and forth over time.
The interesting thing was, I say this to people all the time, during my time at Johns Hopkins, Maryland, both of us, Johns Hopkins and Maryland, were not at the forefront of college lacrosse for the most part. That was the Gate brothers and the Syracuse run.
Yeah.
North Carolina, undefeated in 91 and won the national championship. And during my time at Johns Hopkins, we played Carolina 5 times, including the 1993 national semifinals. We didn't beat North Carolina.
That's a good program.
Princeton had won the title in 92 as well. So I don't think I really appreciated the Maryland-Hopkins rivalry as much as I could have until my senior year in 1994. We're playing Maryland at homecoming. When you say 10,000 people at Johns Hopkins, 10,000 people were there.
That's when it was, 10,000.
10,000 people. And Coach Seaman, I remember, and it was you guys needed the win, we needed the win, and you know, my Maryland friends were like, "Yeah, you guys are the blue bloods and the preppies and the we're the white collar lunch pail." Like, wait a second. Like, you know, we went to the same high school. We both went to Loyola. And I remember Coach Seaman that week saying, "Coach Adell, Dick Adell's telling them that you guys are going to work. You're going to be their bosses one day." And he had us fired up for that game. What are some of the more memorable moments for you from Hopkins, Maryland, 87, 95, 96 aside?
Wow.
Or any other rivalry. I mean, you were ACC champions. And
I know there's my weirdest Hopkins memory. We lose to Navy like one of the few times we lost to Navy in the 18 years. And kids come into, some kids come in the office and they said, so-and-so broke training. And I, we got to do something about it. And we punished these guys and they're suspended for a while. Well, make a long story short, it was a horrible week of practice. We might not even practice for 2 days trying to adjudicate what had taken place. And we go down and steal the game at Hopkins as ill-prepared. But I truly believe that you guys were hearing all this crap that was coming out of our place, you know, and probably, you know, go over to Jerry Smith's place and get an extra.
BJ's, just closed.
Get an extra win that week. I mean, that's when I thought you deserve 95, we deserve 96. You know, that was one we didn't deserve in 90, you know, that game. Mm-hmm.
That's why it's a great rivalry.
I'll tell you my greatest Hopkins story. We have to play the Army-Navy game. It snowed out. And we play it on midweek, like a Wednesday. And lose by a goal, okay? And next Saturday, is Hopkins at our place. And they come out to practice on Thursday. Mm-hmm. And, you know, sulking around, you know, call them in. I'm wasting my time. I'd rather be pushing my kids on the swing than watching this shit going on out here. Mm-hmm. I said, you think you can come out here on Saturday against Johns Hopkins and act like this? You can call a cab, okay? We have the walkthrough on Friday. We meet Hopkins. Chick. End of the game. Chick comes over to the huddle. Never, ever happened to me before. It never happened to me. Can I see something of your team? You know, I'm thinking, holy shit, somebody must have cussed at him.
Sure.
He said, you were the better team today. You deserve to win the game. Mm-hmm. You know, and of course, you know, my jaws dropped. Well, we come out to practice. I celebrate all week, and we come out to practice on Monday afternoon. And we did everything in the stadium, in Mikey's stadium, and they have gotten the gate unlocked. And we call the kids up together, and all of a sudden, there's only one cab in Highland Falls. That's really one too many. It's such a crummy little town. Mm-hmm. And in comes this cab, drives right up to the X, and gets out of the cab. And, yeah, I said, who called a cab? You know, these kids had booked in to come in there. You got time for one more story?
Absolutely.
You got as much time as you want, Coach.
That's my greatest story. We have a Schmeiser Award winner. And I get my ears messed up, Mark.
Is it Army or Maryland?
This is at Army.
And Schmeiser is the defender of the year.
Bobby Henry.
Bobby, okay.
Uniondale High School. And he's partially torn his hamstring. He can't play in the Army-Navy game. And we're down here. We're begging all week. You know, Bobby said, yeah, if I'm going to tear it, let me tear it in the most important game. So we're driving over to the stadium. And I can remember the guy saying, if it's dry, maybe I'll let him do it. Mm-hmm. And it's drizzling. Yeah, it's God's against us. So it clears up. He lets him play. And as we, you know, when we're discussing on the bus, I said, hell, we win this game. I pierced my ear. Okay? Which it was a fun thing for the kids to do. We win the game 9-8, and you stay out on the field. The Jambles are coming down. Anyway, Dolores and I are walking. We're on the far side then. Shitty locker room. And she had heard. I said, now what are you going to do? You know, hey, they've forgotten it by now. You know, and we go in the locker room. And they're pounding the lock. Take her back on the bus. Take her back on the team bus. You know, now how are you going to handle this big mouth? You know, I said, I can't do it. She said, yeah, you're honor bound.
Yeah.
So Vince Carrazzi, my assistant, comes over the next Monday morning and picks me up, and we go to Newburgh Mall. I swear as I'm sitting here, and there's a sign right there, free ear piercing. You know, with if you buy a $10 set of earrings, you're going to say, can I get it for $5? Because I only need one, you know. No, no, you'll split for it all the time. So he's going to sit down and say, what ear do you want in it? So I don't really care. Well, yes, you do. She's explaining it. I think, I want to tell it was my right ear. My memory served me right. And I sit down in this high chair, and she rubs some oil on my ear. I said, my God, what a thick ear though you have. And I am like, boom, out of there. You know, Vince, you pussy. Get your ass back in here. And I come. Did you ever have your ear pierced?
I have, yes.
They shoot it.
Yeah, it's like a
yeah, it's like a staple or something.
Yeah.
Bam. You know, I think my eyes are, I said, give me two band-aids. I probably cover it with one and put the other in my shirt pocket. And we go back. Stop at the house for Dolores to take a picture. As fate would have it, there was no film in the camera.
Oh, my gosh.
I don't have it. I have the picture with the cab up there. And we're going to meet. We meet on Monday's scout report in a side room. There's 4,500 people eating lunch, and we're in a side. I go into the room. Give me your attention. And I pull that band-aid off. Holy shit. Holy shit. The look on their face and the screaming and the yell. And I quick put the band-aid back on, go over to the house, and she takes it out. You know, it's only in my ear maybe 35 minutes or whatever.
Sure.
But that's all they want to talk about. Yeah. You know, we had them. We went to Key West one year, spring break, and we lose the pen. We lose the pen here at Army. And we're going to fly. The Associated Graduates give us $10,000. We're going to fly these guys. What the hell are we? I wouldn't take these guys across the street. And I got the mad Pollock, soft as piss. I got John Baldini, you know, Italian temper. You're damn, yeah. Let's cancel. And Vince Grassi, the old earring.
Yep.
He's famous for being an associate on that. I said, wait a minute, man. You know, you do that, we will piss off every parent. You know, we piss off the kid. We're gone.
Right.
I said, all right, we're gone, but we're going to treat them bad. You know, and we're going to be a bad guy. Well, we spend the week. And we're going to Boston College, not exactly one of the tougher games on our schedule, and with intent on the back end of spring break. And we go out for the last practice before we leave, and they all have their helmets on. It's just 95 degrees of sunshine. You know, something's up. And I have an officer representative with me. Paige Freed, I don't know.
I remember Paige. Yeah.
It's Ricky Freed's father.
Yeah, sure.
They take their helmets off, and they've all pierced their ear.
Oh, my gosh.
Like in unity. They've all got, And when the sun hits it, you know, well, Freed, I look over at Freed. Freed's like, I think he's going down. You know, he is going to pass out. He's in charge of this group.
Yeah.
And 42 guys are crawling. And that was at the end of the year, they gave us shirts. We survived Boca Chica. It was Boca Chica Naval Air Station.
Oh, that's he great.
Was. Yeah. I mean, a lifetime of those kind of stories.
And you can tell when you talk about, you know, your teams at Calvert Hall, at UB, at Army, at Maryland. You know, we were talking before we sat down and started recording, you know, about the visitors that you get here. How would you best characterize your relationship these days with the guys that played for you and the guys you coach with and against?
Let me start with the last part first. You know, it was hard for me to like you as a coach. You know, that's my job. Mm-hmm. It's food on the table. Yet that group of guys that we went against, you know, when my health goes south, they're great relationships. The kids, I wouldn't be here, Mark, if they've kept me alive, man. You know, the kids, the men,
right?
You know, watching, you know, a kid that you a pretty good player become a damn good father, become a hell of a husband, you know, good at what he. I had three generals, you know, three generals in the Army that I coached. And guys successful in all their chosen fields. There rarely a day goes by. Tomorrow I get a visit, tomorrow Saturday. I get a visit from Todd Enzer, the face-off man on that 87 team that mm-hmm. I talked to, on his way down to the Maryland Central Florida game. You know, I see or hear from the guys all the time. And they never get tired of telling stories. I think they enhance them more, you know, as we get further.
The older we get, the better we were.
Yeah, and I said this before, and I'll say it one more time. For 34 years, I got to do something for a living that I like doing with people I like to be around. And so many people get upset, you know, do I have to go to work? You know, I mean, it was a blast. And we did it at a time. Some of these things are starting to get a little bit ugly. You know, I see it with, you know, Nebraska fires the AD yesterday because they a bad hire and they lose, you know, Craig Littlepage down in Virginia. They're chasing him out. And I don't know. We didn't make enough money in our day that they. I worry in our sport when you see some of the salaries that are being paid, that I think the leash is going to be a lot shorter. You know, I don't remember. And you probably can prove me wrong but I don't remember many guys getting fired for being unsuccessful, and so many guys were there forever. Yeah. You know, Dick Garber forever and ever. You know, Scotty. You know, but now I mean now this thing's $300,000. You know, and. The money they're putting in facilities, then Mama used to say, somebody's going to win, but every time somebody wins, somebody will lose. Mm-hmm. You know, and I hope it doesn't change. I was dead, and I got out before I had to go to middle school to recruit. Mm-hmm. You know, that's sick. There's no logical, how can a parent exceed to do something like that? Put pressure on a youngster that's hard enough to make a decision. You know, you're junior and senior in the way you, and to do that, that's crazy. Now, seemingly, core heads have prevailed a little bit.
Yeah, with the new recruiting rules.
Yeah, I'd like to see how that plays out.
Sure.
When I did it, it's still a sport. We still did. It was clean, you know. And I think the game is a better one in the, for the most part. You will never. The athlete that played the game in days past was better, I think, for the most part. Well, the defensive athlete, because we let the football player, a good football player, play the cross. Mm-hmm. I mean, some of the great, and they faced off, and they did maybe some of that face off wing. I can't say. The sticks are better. The skills are better, obviously. Nutrition's better. Condition's better, you know. And I think I'd like to see them. I don't have the solution myself. Put the shot clock in so that if I'm in the north, I'm not calling it a different way than you are calling your game in the south. Mm-hmm. What is, I'm holding it too long in your definition versus mine.
Sure.
You know, make it standard.
And not only in the north and the south, but the Midwest, absolutely. The west. You
absolutely.
Know,
yeah. With and I have to give up. I prefer the game being played more physically, but that's not going to happen because of what happened with football and
sure.
And their helmet vis-a-vis our helmet, which is even less protective.
Right, right.
So I give up on that. You know, hell, the kid had to watch a half and there's no penalty. We had a penalty in the warm up for you. You
know, yeah, you did.
You know, yell at somebody for guys. But I love the sport. I love to watch. I'm not smoking, but I love to watch you guys. The TV is a spectacular vehicle for us.
Thank you.
That's why it's so important that we make them play the game. Don't let the kid from Idaho turn the TV on and see somebody, you know, stalling out, you know, and the fastest.
Sure, sure.
They thought, they were told it was the fastest game on 2 feet, you know. It's a great sport, you know, and we've spent our life around it.
Do you want to do the give and go?
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
So, Coach, Mark and I, we end every podcast kind of in the same way. I will throw out a topic, and then he'll say, like, his three favorite or my three favorite, and then banter about each of them. Or he usually criticizes my...
This is where I make fun of Duke basketball,
yeah.
Bruce Springsteen, and Notre Dame football.
Yeah, we also talk about food a lot.
That is true. Oh, yeah. Food is one of my favorite topics.
So this is a tough three give and go for some Hopkins guys. But since you're here and... we thought we would do our favorite Maryland lacrosse players. And if you feel like commenting on any of the names that come up, feel free, but I'm sure you're going to know all these guys. So I'll start. Now, I don't know how you decided to do yours, but I did it on guys that I actually know
okay.
and I like, and there's not a lot of Maryland lacrosse guys that I really like and know, but these are three of them. So a couple honorable mentions, the Ritz brothers, Xander and Max, and Scott Hockstad, guys that I know, I like those guys. But my third guy is Chris Malone. He's a midfielder. I think he played.
Captain of my last team.
Yeah, he was. He coached at Penn for Volks.
Yeah, Brian Volker. Yeah.
When he was at Penn, he was one of his assistants. I worked at Penn at the time, and really
loyal to Don as well.
Oh, is
yeah. Chris is a loyal to Don. Yeah,
yes, great guy. Number two, Bugs Combs. I knew him when he was like in high school. I'm friends with his older sister Meredith, and then I worked at Towson for a while, and I got to know Gordy pretty well. Like the Combs family, known Bugs a long time. Good goal scorer for the Terps. And then my number one, Scott Hockstad's brother, Craig. I love Craig Hockstad. I think he's one of the best guys I know in the sport. We do a lot of work with him at Inside Lacrosse. He is the president of a company called Game Time Footage.
Just got married.
Yeah, he did. He's got a baby on the way, yep. Or had a baby. Great guy. I talk to him on the phone a lot. We talk about the sport. We talk about the business of lacrosse. And he's just one of my all-time favorites, probably my favorite Terps. And I recently found out I live in his parents' neighborhood. His parents are my neighbors. They live around the corner over in the Dickinson neighborhood of Columbia.
I mean, Dick.
Yeah, wow. It's a small world. That, huh? It's a small
good
world.
Group.
Yeah. All right, Dix, your turn.
Who was the first one?
Chris Malone, Bugs Combs, Craig Hockstad.
The first name you mentioned of the old...
Oh, the Ritz brothers, Xander and Max. That's after me. I think they played for Cottle. They'll have to.
Yeah.
Sure. Okay, so I didn't really think about this a whole lot, but it's easy for me. And this is... So again, you know, when you're playing at Hopkins and you're competing against Maryland and there's Dick Adele on that sideline, you know, telling his guys to take your head off and all that kind of thing. It's funny how things work out because my first venture into television was with WMAR, Toyota Lacrosse Game of the Week. And it was back in 2004, and I can remember, I think it was my third game. They're like, well, we're going to have Dick Adele join us in the booth. And I'm like, oh, boy, how's this going to go? Is he going to punch me out? Or, you know? And I turn the corner. I walk into the booth at Bird Stadium. And there's Coach, hey, Mark, how you doing? I mean, it was like we were best friends. So I think that's, you know, lacrosse transcends everything. Relationships transcend everything. My favorite Maryland players from a watching standpoint, it was all obviously on video, was Frank Urso, four-time All-American, one of the four or five guys in the history of college lacrosse Division I to be a four-time All-American. Brian Reese has become one of my favorite Terps. I've coached with Brian now for probably 6 or 7 years. We still coach together, the Maryland Rough Riders, his son Riley, my son Owen. I don't think there's been a lacrosse team where they've played on from the time they were 5 years old up until now, where they're both 13, that they haven't been teammates. So Brian is a tremendous guy. Dan Radebaugh, who tried to kill me during the 94 homecoming game at Hopkins, said a lot of very, very mean things to me. But we were teammates in high school, and Dan actually coached my older son, Matthew, last year for a little bit. And I've kept in touch with Dan throughout the years and just a tremendous, tremendous lacrosse player. Another guy that I've gotten to know quite well and loved watching him play. He was after I had graduated from Hopkins, is Matt Hahn. I think at the time was the all-time leading goal scorer when he graduated from College Park. Another guy I love to watch play is Joe Walters. I think he's a guy that has just gotten better and better and better, you know, since his college days now into the pro ranks. And the last guy I'll leave you with is Isaiah Davis Allen. And he is somebody that I got to know as a broadcaster. I interviewed him last year for a piece for ESPN. We did a 30, 45-second segment.
Good human interest story.
Great, great kid, great athlete, great person, as you mentioned, you know, a great human interest story, and just a really, really good guy. So they would be my favorite Terps, lacrosse players of all time. So, Coach, I know it might be harder for you, but...
Impossible. You know, you guys did a good job. It's all in the eyes of the beholder.
Yeah. Sure.
We're not going to ask you to do
that. We don't have to. We know you've
never
got
in a million years.
Hundreds of Maryland lacrosse players, I'm sure, that are your guys.
Many.
Yeah.
Well, how about your favorite Hopkins players? Is it a short list?
How about players that you had to coach against? Top five players you've had to coach, top three players you've had to coach against, you know.
Boy.
And I know that's probably putting you on the spot. That could be another, like, dozen guys.
Boy, you're testing me because I'm 16 years removed. I'm trying to think.
Anybody that you coached against that makes you wake up in the middle of the night and say, oh, my goodness.
Doug Russell was one that I mean, was a good player from the first day I saw him. I want to tell you, he was a good player from freshman year.
And who was that again?
Del Dressel.
Del Dressel, sure.
Four-time first-team
All-American. Yeah.
A couple of my favorites, not necessarily all-time favorite player-wise.
Sure.
Brody Merrill.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Is one of my...
Man, he's good.
I'm going to tell you, if you keep a close eye, number 28 for Maryland, I think he can have two more years because he missed a year.
Matt Neufeld. Yeah.
Is a spinning... He plays the game. He makes the game look easier than the game is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like Brody sprint. He didn't have. I mean, and that's the same way. Unsung hero, man. He did a lot of good things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, real nice kid too. Really nice kid.
Yeah. I always felt most of the characters that I dealt with were the goalies, that they stopped too many balls without their helmet on. You know, the Brian Dougherty's, Jimmy Beermore's, George Sabowski up at West Point. There's some.
What's a good Doc story?
Oh, Doc. in that game in 95, you know, I'm absolutely ape. I'm backwards about something on the sideline, you know, and I yell to him to make discretion. Beep him. Chill. I said, why don't you chill? What do you say? Pinky. Whenever he starts to overheat, his skin turns like pink. It's 1995. We are about to play the best hockey team that year. One of the best ever. There's no way. And we're staying at the hotel out off of 216. And I tell these guys, I threaten these guys, you pack, you know, we're gonna be there through Monday night. We're gonna lift the trophy Monday, you know. Well, Saturday morning, I pack all my stuff up, my suitcase, and I don't know what happened. For some reason, the captains had to come down to the room. Danny will verify this. He and Greg will walk in the room and look around the corner. Don't tell anybody. That's a true story. And they had more faith than I did.
Yeah.
On that one. Caught me in the act.
Well, Coach, we got to thank you so much for your time and the stories. We could be here all day, but we're going
to
wrap up.
We may have to come back in another time.
Yeah. You're welcome back anytime. It's fun, guys.
Yeah, it was.
Enjoyed it.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks.